Hey everybody, it's JT. What is on your holiday meal shopping list? Well, I would suggest Painted Hills Natural Beef. It is some of the best beef in the world. And your friends and family will be thanking you for a long time if you serve Painted Hills Natural Beef for your holiday meals. And now you can buy it online just by going to PaintedHillsBeef.com. Use the code BBQNATION at checkout and save yourself 15% on your order. Give Painted Hills Natural Beef a place on your table this holiday season.
It's Barbecue Nation with JT on a Northwest Lifestyle Weekend. Now here's JT.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Nation. That would be the Barbecue Nation. I'm JT at the grill and Dr. Dave at the bar. And we'd also like to welcome all of our affiliates all over the Northwest. On the Radio Northwest Network. Well, Barbecue Nation has been on the RNW now for almost 2 years. And one of the questions I get a lot via email or in person is, when can they hear the second part of an interview that I did a long while back with Aaron Franklin? Now, Aaron will be on the show again this year. But, you know, guys like him, they're pretty busy. So he's traveling an awful lot these days because he's doing more television. Anyway, I digress. So today you're going to get to hear part two of an interview that I did with Aaron a while back. And he talks about the pork they buy for pulled pork and the ribs and this type of stuff. So I think you're going to have some fun with that. In our third and fourth segment today, the good old Dr. Dave is going to ask me some questions about barbecue. And I'm going to try to answer them. And if I can't, well, then I'll just make something up. And so for those of you who have requested this, we are happy to present an interview with Aaron Franklin.
How do you choose the right spare ribs?
Oh boy, spare ribs are tricky. You know, we use full spares. I prefer Duroc, Chester White, hybrids, you know. I think when you get into heritage breeds on spare ribs, you get kind of get some weird stuff. You get a lot of kind of, you know, differences in the way the fats melt down and stuff.
Sure.
I absolutely do not use commodity. But, you know, it's kind of a shame because really, if you're not concerned with the ethical side of it at all and, like, the quality of the animal's life and all that kind of stuff, commodity ribs tend to actually cook better for barbecue stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing that's factory solutioned or any of that kind of stuff. But,
right,
you know, something that's just got a little, you know, a little more of a homogenous product. But at the restaurant, we use full Duroc. And, yeah, they're really sensitive. I mean, if you get into heritage breeds, that's really about the only direction they go in. But they're so much more difficult to cook just because the windows of air are so, so small.
Sure.
And sometimes they're really paper thin. It's so hard to get consistent ribs that don't have a lot of shiners on them. Yeah, ribs are pretty tricky, I think.
You just talked about shiners. That was my next question. Probably most of the people have not heard the term shiner used in association with pork ribs. Did you develop that or did somebody else develop that term?
No. That term's been around forever.
Okay. You want to explain to them what it is?
Yeah. If you ever get a rack of ribs and you can see the rib bones kind of poking through on the meat where it's been trimmed, it's been fabbed too close to the ribs, that's called a shiner.
There you go. Now, do you pull the filament off the back?
No. We leave the membranes on.
Do you?
You know, it doesn't do anything for flavor, and we cook them so tender anyway, it doesn't do anything for tenderness for us. So I totally leave them on. If I was doing a competition, I would pull them off. But, you know, the flavors that I want to get on the ribs are going to soak through that membrane anyway. I think that's just kind of silly to think otherwise. Yeah, totally leave them on. We don't, you know, we're cooking probably 75 racks for a 3-hour window for service.
Sure.
So I'm not about to, you know, take 4 hours out of my day to pull off 75 membranes.
No, I get it. When people say, boy, that's good, it just fell off the bone. To me, I don't particularly always want my meat falling off the rib bone. I want it soft and tender and all that, but actually if I pick it up and the meat falls off the bone, I think it's been overcooked a little bit. So,
well, and that's true, and that's kind of why I say that they're so tricky, because you have such a small window of air. If I'm pulling ribs off for service, I'm probably looking at about a 1-minute window of perfection.
Mm-hmm.
On that cook, and then you have to calculate carryover. So if it's summertime, I'll pull ribs before they're even tender and hope that they kind of rest into tenderness on the table. If it's wintertime, I might take them a little bit too far because I think they're going to tighten up a little bit. So that goes with experience. And, you know, we don't toothpick anything, and they're wrapped in foil when I pull them off, so I have to feel through the foil too. But, like, it's such a small, small window of that tenderness before it is overcooked. We typically cook things a lot, more tender, borderline overcooked. I also agree. I don't think the meat should fall off the bone, but it should be pretty gosh darn close.
Yeah.
As close as you could get it without it actually falling off.
No,
And that's really, really hard thing to pull off.
It is, and I agree with you. I don't want to insult anybody that thinks that, you know, I have a lot of old people around me, and they have to kind of gum things. So anyway, we like to make.
Yeah, me too. But, you know, if you were doing a competition, I mean, that would fail miserably on the circuit, if you will.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because technically you should be able to bite through a rib and see your teeth marks and have a clean bite with, just a fraction of a second of moisture left to evaporate on the bone.
Right.
You know, that technically is right, but who says, you know, technically right? I mean, it's all opinions, so.
Oh, yeah.
Cook it the way you like it. Nothing is wrong.
Cook it the way you like it. Now, you've got, you guys do a lot of sausages and, brats. Whatever you want to call them. I mean, they're called different things in different parts of the country. Tailgating season is coming up. Big football fans here in Oregon, the Northwest, Texas. Geez, you don't even have to talk about Texas in football. When we go to the games and you walk through the parking lots and people are doing the tailgate, you see a lot of burnt sausages and a lot of burnt brats and a lot of, whatever. And what's the trick to that? I mean, I know, but what does Aaron Franklin do?
A lot of people that burn those things are probably grilling them. And I like a grilled sausage, as much as the next guy. But, it's just fire management. You know, if it's too hot, it'll probably burn. If it's not hot enough, it probably won't.
Well, that's simple enough.
It sounds pretty simple. But we cook all of our sausages on an offset cooker, so we don't really deal with that kind of stuff too much. You know, right now we cook them all fresh every day. So, yeah, there are so many. Boy, that would be like another four shows.
Oh, sure.
Talking about sausage casings.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Talk about rubs and spices a little bit. I'm going to give you my big peeve, and then you can jump on that or work around it. I have no peeve with the stuff I ate at your place, that's for sure. But most people, they come and they say, I developed a rub. I have my own special rub. Okay, good. I mean, I'm sincere. Good. That's great. And then when you taste it, a lot of them are very similar, and to me, they've done things like a little too much black pepper, sometimes a lot too much of black pepper, a little paprika, a little heavy on that. And maybe they like that. That's fine. But they tend to go a lot in the same direction, and they don't get very creative where, I think you can if you want to.
I think you could. I think different rubs, obviously, for different meats are okay. I mean, if you're doing a really short cook, like, say, chicken thighs or something like that, I think you could get a lot more detail than a rub, and you might actually be able to put a little bit of sugar in there.
Uh-huh.
Whereas on a brisket, I would absolutely never consider putting any type of sugar on a brisket.
Right.
And a lot of people think of, like, oh, well, that's how you get a bark. Well, that's not how you get a bark. You get a bark with a real fire and airflow. I think it depends on, you got to think about how much smoke is going to get on that. How long is it going to cook? How are the fats going to melt down? How are they going to go with the rub that's on there? Are they going to conflict with anything? Are they going to complement, like pepper is really, really amazing with melted fat. It all just kind of becomes one.
Oh, yeah.
That's kind of how we roll here in Central Texas. So I think, you really need to think about, how long it's going to cook for, what flavors are going to go on there, and what are you trying to do? You know, a lot of people put cake on so much rub on a brisket, or on ribs especially, too, just like packing it on there with just tons of stuff in there. It's like, are you tasting rub or are you tasting the ribs?
Yep.
Like, how does this animal taste? Is it, what breed is it? What, it seems to me that you would just want to be able to taste the meat. And that's kind of what we do at the restaurant. You know, we really are pretty delicate with our rubs. Really just salt and pepper on most everything. And, it's just there to complement and pull out natural flavors out of the brisket or out of the ribs and stuff. So that's kind of how I go with it.
Well, I'm stammering here, but I agree. I order something because I want to eat that particular thing. I don't want to order it to taste, some sort of spice with it. My theory always was, Aaron, I want the spices to complement whatever it is that I'm cooking.
And they absolutely should.
Yeah. Not go the other way where the meat, you know, it's just like that. And it's the same with sauces. That's why I liked, you know, the Texas thing where, especially like at your place where, you know, it's dipping sauces.
Yeah, it's there if you want it, but, you know, probably should taste the meat first.
Yeah, no, I'm just saying it's available to dip. It's not slathered in sauce when you get it. And, you know, that's, to me, that's barbecue. Not somebody.
I think so too. Yeah. I would hate to force something on someone that didn't want it.
Hey, Aaron, we got to take a quick break. Folks, don't go away. We'll be back in just a few minutes with more of Barbecue Nation and Aaron Franklin after these lovely words from somebody. I don't know.
It's Barbecue Nation with JT on a Northwest Lifestyle Weekend.
Hey, welcome back. We're doing low and slow on this Saturday afternoon on Barbecue Nation. We'll get back to Aaron Franklin in just a minute, but I want to say hi to a couple of our affiliates. KACI and the Dalles, who've been frying up there in the gorge. Man, the weather's been kicking their butts. I hope it gets a little cooler today for them. And KMED down in Medford, same thing. You guys need a little water. We're probably not going to get it anytime soon. Anyway, let's get back to our conversation with the crazy man from Austin, Texas, Aaron Franklin.
Your side dishes, I love that you do have some recipes in your book on your side dishes, your beans and your potato salad, slaw, and that type of thing. Mm-hmm. Did you develop those, or did Stacy do those for you? Now, fess up.
No. We just kind of made them up. I mean, the bean recipe, that's just as simple as it gets. I think it's 2 parts salt, 1 part pepper, and then a bunch of chili powder and a little bit of garlic powder or something in there, and a handful of onion. So, yeah, I mean, they're all really simple. The potato salad, salt, pepper, mayo, mustard, and pickles.
So how do you decide if you're putting out a spread? I mean, you've obviously mastered this at the restaurant, but you know, if you're cooking at home, how do you decide what side dishes go with what particular meat? I mean, what's your thought process behind that?
I don't really think too much about it. I like potatoes a lot because they're easy, they're filling, and they're cheap. Yeah. And I really just happen to have a soft spot for potato salad in general. I think it's because I'm a Texan. So potato salad is normally on there. It doesn't have to be mustardy. It could be whatever. And beans are just really easy. That's kind of a standard. So slaw's good. I don't really think too much about the sides. We have the 3 at the restaurant, and it's just because those are the 3 real standard ones. And we try to make them good and pretty much just leave it at that.
What's your advice, Aaron, for besides always have beer readily available when you're working around a barbecue? What's your advice to folks at home, and let's put it in 2 stages, if you will. The real novice who's got their first smoker or their first charcoal grill or whatever, and then a little more advanced person that's been doing it for, you know, maybe 10 years and still hasn't really mastered it yet, and probably because they don't spend enough time doing it. They're busy doing other things. But what kind of advice can you give those folks?
I think I have 1 piece of advice for everyone is just don't be impatient. You know, you can't cook something too fast. You can't rush it. If it's not ready, it's just not ready. If it's not tender yet, it's just not there. You know, and it's really, you know, it makes you really anxious sometimes if you have people coming over, or, you know, you have, you know, 500 people waiting in line at a restaurant and something's not ready yet. They're like, oh my God, it's not ready. Cook it hotter. And then you end up messing it up. And then you kind of, you know, start overthinking things, or start making mistakes. Just be cool. Allow yourself plenty of time. Really just kind of think about, like, use common sense, I guess. You know, like, sure. Think about what's going to happen. You know, just because you pull a brisket off of the cooker doesn't mean you can slice it right then and there. You need to let it rest for a little bit. You know, same things are going to keep cooking. Just, you know, give yourself plenty of time, and don't get impatient with it.
And don't short yourself on the libations either.
Well, maybe short yourself a little bit, because you sure don't want to get sloppy and mess anything up.
No. But pace yourself. How's that? That's a better term.
Yeah. Pace yourself very well.
Aaron Franklin, it has been truly a pleasure, and I hope to have you back on Barbecue Nation very soon.
Well, sure thing.
It's when are you coming to Portland?
I'll be up in Portland for Feast on about September 15th through the 20th.
Okay.
I've got two events at Feast. I'm doing the Sandwich Invitational, which should be pretty cool. I'm really excited about what I'm cooking for that.
Cool.
Yep. Not going to share any more details, but
that's all right.
I'm pretty excited about it. And then I'm hosting a dinner at Stumptown Headquarters that Friday at 4 o'clock.
Oh, cool.
And we're driving a barbecue pit up there and going to barbecue in a parking lot. Should be fun.
I will be talking to you about that. We'll come visit you. How's that?
Yeah.
Hey, you know what? Aaron is a fun guy. I'm really looking forward to seeing him up here in September. Maybe you and I can go over and get some free barbecue from him or something.
I'm down with that.
You're good with that?
Yeah.
Speaking of free barbecue, there's a couple of things. New research out from one of the medical journals says that if you eat spicy foods, you'll live longer.
Really?
I think it gives you more exercise because you're running to the bathroom all the time.
Yeah.
But if you eat spicy foods at least one or two days a week, you had a 10% reduced risk, if I can say that properly, of overall, Al's one of our sales guys, by the way, mortality compared to those who ate less spicy meals every week. So,
interesting.
Basically, you increase your chances of living longer by 10% if you eat spicy foods twice a week.
Yeah, I once knew a guy who would eat those really disgusting spicy chicken sandwiches that you can get at fast food restaurants.
Right.
And his claim was that it was speeding up the metabolism, which I don't think was true.
I don't think so.
Sounds like when you're like eating like spices with like your barbecue or maybe like if you're into Indian or curry
Chinese
food.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I think that's what it, that's it. It's not chicken McFlare or whatever it is. You know? But no, I really think that's kind of an interesting thing. And it says they looked at the deaths of from specific causes and they found that spicy foods were linked to reduce the risk of death from cancer.
Yeah.
Heart disease, respiratory system illnesses.
Interesting.
Yeah. Probably because you're always going,
right.
You know.
Maybe.
Yeah, it's hot. And then another thing here, just for fun. Michigan is preparing to host its annual barbecue at the Big House. You know what that is? The football stadium.
Yeah.
Okay. For recruits. Now, this has been going on for a little while now. The initial event was held in 2009, and it was started by Rich Rodriguez. And the first barbecue they threw there resulted in two commitments from Christian Peace and Kenny Wilkins.
Okay. Oh, okay.
Then Brady Hoke carried on the tradition when he took over. And in 2012, the barbecue visit proved to be the final push needed for the Wolverines to land linebacker Michael Ferns the following week.
Wow. So the idea is that they put on a good barbecue event.
Yeah.
And the football players will come.
And their families.
Yeah. So if you grill it, they will come.
Yes.
Even though it's kind of a baseball thing.
It is kind of a baseball thing. But
same idea.
But it, yeah.
Interesting.
It's still working.
Yeah.
So, good. You know, if they want me to come cook for them, just let me know.
Sure.
All right. We'll be back with more Barbecue Nation after this.
It's a Northwest Lifestyle Weekend. Now, with Barbecue Nation, here's JT.
Hey, welcome back to Barbecue Nation. I'm JT, along with Dr. Dave here. If you'd like to contact us, which I'm sure you would, you can do it email at barbecuenation, that's bbqnation@kxl.com, or you can send us a recipe. And if you send us a recipe and a picture, and we like it, and we publish it on Facebook, you're going to get a prize from our prize closet. Indeed, it's going to be a smoker box from those folks up at Smokehouse Products, i.e. Bear Mountain Forest Products. They make great stuff. Little stainless steel smoker box, put chips, pellets, stuff like that. You're looking like you don't know what I'm talking about.
Never used one.
Well, it's good. It's very good. Very handy. And you can also look at us on Facebook, which is Barbecue Nation/JT. That's all you have to do. And you can find us, and there's recipes and announcements for the shows and some of the stuff we're doing on the other show, which is Grilling at the Green. So there you go.
Also got SoundCloud and iTunes.
iTunes now. We're knocking them out on SoundCloud. You know that?
Yeah.
We broke a new record the other day.
What?
Yeah. We broke a new record on SoundCloud. Nice. And we broke a new record for listens in the shortest period of time on the last show we did with Jack Timmons.
Yeah.
From Seattle. Jack's nice. Up there. Yeah. Really cool. Anyway, you had a question for me.
The other day I was barbecue. Well, I attempted to. I cooked some great steaks.
Yes, you did.
Juicy.
I was coaching.
Yes, you.
Via text.
Whenever I have to grill something or broil something, yeah, I'll be calling you.
Okay.
So hopefully you're available throughout the summer. My question is, when you're broiling, most people will have it like a rack or two above or close to the broil.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can't adjust the temperature, should you move it down closer or farther down?
Lower.
And then how long, depending on the thickness, I guess, how long would you cook one side?
Well, there's a couple schools of thought, but let's go back to the temperature thing at first. Most newer ovens will allow you to make some consideration. And by that, I mean, if you're going to broil a steak and for some reason you can't get the grate out, the oven grate to lower it,
sure,
and you don't want to lower it, because really the more direct heat you have that's controlled heat, the better it's going to be. But if it's too hot, if the steak, let's talk about steak, if the steak has a little too much fat, or you've marinated it or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Those kind of add into the equation, because with marinades, you're putting some sugar or some other liquid on it that can cause it to char up a little too fast. So, excuse me, my allergies will be over in September. When the newer ovens, when you press the button that says broil, and it'll say like high and then low, something like that. If you go to hit a number, like if you press the button that says broil, like on ours, and you hit the number 5, it'll say high on the little screen. And then if you hit the broil button again, that's what it is. It locks it in at high. On ours, you can adjust it by saying hit the broil button, hit the number 4 or 3 or whatever you want, and then dial in the exact temperature you want. So maybe I want to broil this at 375 degrees because it's something that I'm going to just like put a crust on a casserole or something.
Okay.
So you would do that. And then you could also lower the rack one slot lower like that. And you can play with it. Most people, I think, are a little scared of broiling because it's really hot and it's very close to the heat source.
Right.
And so people don't know what to do. You can adjust it, like you were saying, Dave, move those racks or adjust the actual broiling temperature. You could actually broil at 200 degrees. It's not going to do much for you, but the heat is going to come from the top instead of the bottom. And that's basically what broiling is.
Right.
Okay. So that's one of the things I would do. Now, as far as really thick steaks or another cut of meat,
yeah, because I don't want to burn the outside,
right?
But I want to get it done on the inside.
Right. So some people have been critical of this method, but it's almost like the reverse sear method. Again, in our oven at home, I can put it up to 500 degrees. I'll put if I've got a really thick steak, say 2 inches thick.
Sure.
I'll put it, season it, do whatever you're going to do with it. Put it in there on the broiling pan at 500 degrees. But not on broil. It's a hot oven.
Right.
Okay. And I switch after a few minutes because I know, like, my wife doesn't like things overly rare.
Right. Mine too.
And I prefer things a little more rare.
Yeah.
Juicier. Okay.
Medium.
Yeah. And so you can make some adjustments that way. But what I'll do is I'll cook it in a oven at 500 degrees for, say, 5 minutes, 6 minutes. You're getting the meat warm on the inside. The whole thing's warm now. Then I'll go ahead and broil.
But it doesn't look like it's getting cooked at 5-6 minutes.
It is. You're only cooking something that's that thick. Okay? And it's sitting on a piece of hot steel. And it's got heat all around it. Okay. So, and you're talking about really tissue or muscle that has already expanded and it's warm. So you don't have to, what I wouldn't say is throw it in there like you're going to cook a rump roast and leave it in there for 500 degrees for 15 minutes and then try to, put a little bark on it that way by broiling it. Because it will be done all the way through, but just like your Reeboks. You know, it's going to be pretty damn tough and chewy if you do that.
I marinated it with some teriyaki sauce and put it in. I think the first side I left it at, I want to say 10 to 15 minutes, actually. And then.
But how high was it? Or
That was on a high broil, and that was probably on the second rack down.
Okay.
And then I turned it over. And that went about 10 more minutes. Mm-hmm. But I did lower the temperature because you showed me how to do that.
Yeah.
Because mine didn't have a high or low broil, but I could adjust the temperature.
Okay.
So then after that, that's what it looked like.
Yeah.
It was done.
It looked great in the picture you sent me.
It looked
really good. And you've not stopped.
It was medium well.
You've not stopped talking about it for 5 days now. But
it was good.
It looked really good.
Yeah. It melted in my mouth. It was awesome.
I think one of the things is cooking and barbecuing.
Two different
things, but yeah. Versus baking. Baking is like chemistry.
Right. Okay?
You've got to have it pretty close to what the recipe says or the ingredients are. When you're cooking, especially meat, flesh, whether it's fish, pork, or whatever, you have a little bit of wiggle room. On everything and in every method. Some people will disagree with that, but I don't. Because you've got time and you've got can vary things. Like you were talking, the racks, the temperature, this type of thing. And I don't think there's a hard and fast rule that says you have to cook this at, 550 degrees for 8 minutes a side. And it's perfect. Some ovens aren't the same.
Oh, yeah.
Some of the beef, for example, on steaks is not going to be the same. The more marbling, the juicier it is, the faster it's actually going to cook.
True.
And you have to be careful because you'll burn the fat.
Oh, that's true, yeah. Well, what about, like on my barbecue, it's got, supposedly a high-low for the gas, but high is like 500 and 600 degrees, and low is 300. And there's no varying in between there. It's hard to find that perfect cooking temperature for steak or chicken or anything like that on a barbecue.
It's very tough to do that in barbecues.
You really have to watch it, too.
Well, because you got hot spots.
Yes.
And most grills do. Even the very, very expensive grills have hot spots. Where if it's gas, maybe there's a little impediment in the gas flow or the holes in the burner because they just get stamped out. There's not a guy that sits there and taps them out with a little plug thing. They're all stamped and preformed, but maybe this one didn't come out right. And so that inhibits the flow of gas. And so you've got a spot there that may be a little colder or a little hotter. So, anyway, that's what I know.
Varying side to side.
Yeah. We're going to take a break. We're going to be back with Barbecue Nation, wrap up the show this week. And we do hope you enjoyed Aaron's little chat in the first two segments. Dr. Dave and I will be right back.
It's full-flavored radio, Barbecue Nation with JT.
Welcome back to Barbecue Nation here on the Radio Northwest Network. I'm JT along with Dr. Dave. Next week, by the way, we've got Carolyn Wells from KCBS. She's going to tell us about all the new things that are happening out there on the barbecue trail. It's kind of fun. They got a new building.
What?
Yeah, they got a new building and they got new fancy stuff. She's going to be talking about that. Dave and I were talking at the break, and if you do have questions specifically about, you know, cooking something or grilling something, whatever, you can send them to me at barbecuenation@kxl.com. That gets right to me. Or you can go to the Cowboy Cook website and send them to info@thecowboycook.com. And I always try to answer those questions directly, but I also try to answer them on the air when I can, depending about the guests and if they talk a lot and all that stuff.
Right.
But we have decided in this executive moment that we will be also saving up some questions, and a couple times a year, Dave will be like reading the questions and I'll answer them to the best of my ability. So all you have to do is, again, send us at, you can do either do it at info@thecowboycook.com or you can do it at barbecuenation@kxl.com.
So you get twice as much mail.
Then. You get twice as much mail. Like, nice. I need less.
Yeah.
Yeah, I need less. So we've got Carolyn Jones. Carolyn Jones. She passed away. Thank you, Mama Adams. Morticia, remember?
Oh, yeah.
The Adams family. That was good. Carolyn Wells, KCBS, like I said, will be on next week. She is always a hoot. She's a lot of fun. And we have Simon Majumdar coming up in June. Some other big hitters. Aaron will be back on this summer. Steve Reichlin will be back on this summer. So we've got some good talent coming up here. We can do that.
Good cooking.
Anything else I can answer for you today? No, you're not getting a raise.
Oh, man.
Go to the seventh.
Not that you pay me anyway.
Go to the seventh floor for that. I can't help you on that
nice.
One.
Nice. Okay. One thing I've really gotten good at, and I was scared of cooking for a long, long time, was pork chops.
Mm-hmm.
I can't do them on the barbecue.
Why?
Because of the variances we were talking about.
Oh, the hot spots and the cold spots.
Hot spots, cold spots. It's never the same.
Mm-hmm.
But I've got it down broiling.
Okay.
I broil on high. I've seasoned them. I keep an eye on them.
There's
seven to 10 minutes.
You know, but there's not a lot of difference because in a broiler, or in an oven you're broiling on, and in a barbecue, you're in a very warm, confined area.
Yeah.
Okay. It's just your heat sources are a little different.
Right.
So let me ask you this. When you're barbecuing them, do you keep the lid down?
I do, but I keep opening it to look.
Stop that.
I know you say that, but
that's
how I burn stuff.
What do you mean that's how you burn
stuff? That's how stuff gets burned in my barbecue look.
Yeah, but one of the reasons stuff gets burned in your barbecue is because you're lifting the lid and you're taking all the heat out and then you're putting it back down, but not all the heat escapes. The heat that's on the bottom of the pork chop and on the grate right there doesn't drop down 150 degrees in 4 seconds. The ambient heat that's in the air goes away, but the metal stays hot.
Right.
Okay? So you keep fussing like that, but you're still going to burn the bottom of them because you're not trusting the grill. The other thing you can do is this. You have an upper rack on your grill?
Yes.
Okay. Get them, again, kind of, you know, cooked on both sides.
Okay.
Like that. Put them up on the upper rack. And if you're going to season them with something other, I mean, like a sauce or, they make Worcestershire for pork.
Nice. I'll have to try that.
Yeah, it's in a green wrapper.
Okay.
Yeah. But anyway, we'll talk about that later. But you can, stack them up on the top of the rack. They're in the top of the dome of the barbecue. It's really warm up there.
Yeah.
So it kind of will finish them off. It's not going to put bark on them. It's not going to be, you're not going to get really nice grill marks up there or something. But they will be done. They will be very edible. And it should save you some more juice. There too.
So, okay. Would that be the place where you would also do hot dogs?
Yep.
And corn?
Yep. Yep.
Wrap the corn in aluminum foil?
You can just, what I do is I just pull back the silk and stuff, put the corn in some water,
mm-hmm.
tie the silk back up and throw it up on that upper rack. It kind of steams it. I'll show you how to do that.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. And hot dogs in that, because if you're... You know, one of the problems that people have is they're trying to do too many things on one grilling surface.
Yeah.
They're trying to cook chicken over here and maybe a steak or a pork chop over here. And then down here, they got Little Bobby's hot dog.
Yeah.
Well, Little Bobby's hot dog is either going to have the snot burned out of it or it's going to be raw And sometimes it's burnt with bra on the inside.
That's true, too.
But we'll talk about more of that in the next show a little bit. But, yeah, so be careful. Anyway, we got to go. We got to get out of here. Don't forget our motto around here, Dave, which is?
Turn it, don't burn it.
There you go. Check us out on thecowboycook.com. We'll see you next week, everybody. Enjoy the sunshine.